Welcome to Front Row Geeks, episode 5! Woo, woo, woo. And the real episode 5, because last time I said episode 5 and it really wasn't episode 5. I screwed up. I can't even say 5 right, honestly. But yeah, this is episode number 5. And I'm going to start counting from here. If this is not episode 5 for you, it is now. That's the rule. There's a 6 recorded, but it's actually episode 5. It's because I count things from 0, because, you know, that's how I do. So, it's okay. So, happy new year, everybody. It's good to be in the new year. It's been a busy year for me already. I hope it's all been good for everyone out there. I wanted to get this episode out earlier, but we had company over. My nephew Liam was in town, so that was good to see him. My brother was in town. Oh, it was so good. It was so, so good. Of course, the only drawback was that now I have this. Yeah. Oh, you can hear that? Oh, that was beautiful. I have that. But it's okay. It was for Liam. And I'm okay with that. But then after that, I started my MBA program. So now I have 3 jobs. School, mining, and HR Block. So, yeah. And somehow in between all that, I'm going to keep talking to you guys. I swear. This is January now, and besides this episode, we have another one coming up within the next couple of weeks, and I have 2 recordings scheduled really, really soon, so the content is coming, I swear. And if you're not getting enough off the podcast, you should be listening and watching the Twitch channel. I go there sometimes, but you can definitely be assured that David and company will provide you with the best entertainment that they can provide, and it's something. They're beautiful people, and you should be listening to them as much as you should be listening to me. So tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell the person you don't like, tell the person you do like to listen to Front Row Geeks and to watch our Twitch channel. Just search Front Row Geeks. Today's episode has to do with a local director and a local actor. The actor and director, both of them, are part of this movie called El Alambrista. Alambrista. Say that. That is beautiful. Luchador hero from Mexico. Battling the forces of persecution. And a zombie. And come on. Who doesn't want to see that? I enjoyed it. So I think you should all give it a try. And if you need more proof, just listen to this podcast and you'll see who we're talking about. And you're going to definitely want to give them a chance. So without further ado, today's podcast with Alfonso and Fausto. Begin! No. Now begin!
Welcome to Front Row Geeks.
For everything.
All right. So did you guys do anything special for Christmas?
No, I just worked.
Where do you work?
Channel 9.
Where?
Channel 9.
Oh, Channel 9.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What do you do?
News cameraman.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. I've never actually met anyone who works for local news.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine there's a lot of people do because these are big things and big networks that run this stuff, but...
There's, I think there's like 30 of us that are camera guys in town that work for local TV. Like 30, 35 at the most. No, I've been in TV for 16 years now. Before you leave, I'll show you a report that I did yesterday, that came out yesterday.
Oh, okay, that'd be cool. You know what? You are kind of far off from... Maybe moving here would help, or... Like,
right.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You hear me?
Or just yell the whole time.
Talk like a man.
You're further than me.
Sorry.
But I talk like a man. Can you talk like a man?
Yeah, he spikes when I see him record, when he talks. It's all right, man. You can yell at me. I can take it. I have a strong outer shell. I can do it. So how long have you been doing that then?
TV?
Yeah.
16 years.
16 years. Wow.
Yeah.
Same place or just
no,
move
started,
around a bit?
I started at Channel 4 at KVOA, and I did 3.5 years there. And then after that, I've been at Channel 9 ever since. So 16 years in the business.
And Alfonso, right?
Right, Alfonso.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's my middle name, actually, and my pop's name.
Yeah, remember telling me that at Comic-Con.
So, I was like, and honestly, dude, I think you're the only Alfonso I've met outside of my family.
Really?
Yeah, just I don't meet a lot of people with that name anymore. Like some, I mean, I've seen like some actor names that Alfonso, but
Alfonso Arau.
But yeah, some like I don't know if I know him.
He's
A Day Without a Mexican.
No, that's Sergio. That's a
star. I didn't see that one yet. Right. I actually haven't. That's on my queue. No, I haven't
Alfonso,
seen that yet.
You seen the Three Amigos?
Sí.
El Guapo.
That was the name of the movie.
El Guapo. Remember the character El Guapo, the
main
bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's Alfonso.
Oh,
and he's a movie director too. He did a movie to what is it called? What is that movie called? Agua por Chocolate.
Agua por Chocolate.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And then he also did Zapata, and then he was also like in that movie like Romance in the Stone. Remember the movies? You remember those? So, and then there's Alfonso, the Academy Award winner director. So
I think I heard of him before.
He's the one that did Gravity.
Okay, then I didn't hear about him before then.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Obviously, I'm not paying enough attention to Alfonso's out there.
Yeah. Well, Alfonso Cuarón did that movie, Y Tu Mamá También. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I did see that one, at least parts of it.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
His new movie is Birdman.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, that's more of a reason to see. I haven't had time to see that yet.
He's mainstream, you know. He's like Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo del Toro is huge.
Oh yeah, I know that guy. Yeah.
Oh, Alfonso's getting up there. I mean, he already won an Oscar.
Oh man, well that's good. Okay, good. I'm gonna tell my dad that his namesake is getting out there now.
Yeah, it is. I remember a couple years ago when I was about a year ago when I called the Loft Cinema when I wanted to rent the theater. I called and I left a message. And I said, you know, hey, I'm Alfonso Salongas' house, and I'm interested in about renting the theater. And the woman called me back, and she's like, oh my God, my heart dropped, because they told me that Alfonso called the theater. They thought it was Alfonso Cuarón. I was like, no, it's me, a little
No,
less,
I'm sorry.
Lesser guy. Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know if I would have told someone that. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were the bigger Alfonso. I'm sorry.
No.
But hey, sure, you can come to the Lofts.
Yeah, she's like, oh, my heart dropped. I thought Alfonso Cuarón called the theater. I was like, no. But if you guys want to treat me like that, go for it. That's fine.
No, if I were her, I wouldn't have told you that. I mean, just to say, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were somewhere more important. But cool, yeah, we'll set you up.
That's understandable.
And you're Fausto?
Fausto.
Ah, cool, man. So, you wear the mask in the movie?
Yes, I'm a lambrista.
Ah, cool, man. And you directed it?
Yeah, directed it, wrote it, shot it, edited it.
So where did that come from, the movie? And is it a sequel to another movie you have
sequel,
or something?
Yeah, it is part two. The first one, what happened was, I sat down and... Well, I work at Channel 9,
mm-hmm.
and I back in the day when I back in 2002, I used to work in the studio, and I'd do the studio cameras and run audio. So you do the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock show, and then you have downtime from 6:30 till like 9:30. People go on their dinner breaks and then just hang out. But what I did in the meantime, I would sit back there and write movie scripts. So I wrote this movie script called El Coyote Negro, and this is back like, in 2002, and I wrote this movie about a coyote smuggler, but when I was done writing it, I realized I wrote too big of a movie. There's no way I can be able to produce this movie with the experience that I had and the not having a budget. So I decided, you know, I'm going to write something else that's smaller. And I started thinking, I'm like, you know what? I haven't seen a Lucha Libre movie out in a long time. And the majority of people that didn't know what Lucha Libre was... A lot of people, like, for instance, at work, when I would tell them, I'm going to make this Lucha Libre movie, they didn't know what it was, like what it's about, so I'd explain it to them. And I grew up watching those movies, you know, like El Santo, The Blue Dem, and Mil Máscaras. And I grew up watching those movies as a kid, so I was like, you know, I'm going to make one of those. But I wanted to go do some research, because I haven't seen them in a long time either. So I went to video stores. Nobody had it. I went online. Nobody had it. And then one day at Best Buy, they had the El Santo box collection. So I bought it and I watched it. I remember seeing this. So that was somewhat of my research. But, you know, I had a lot of experience watching them as kids. So I wrote this movie, and since we're close to the border, I decided to make it an immigration movie. You know, it's the traditional immigration story of a guy in Mexico. Something happens, he gets to come to the United States, works, but the only difference is that he wanted to be a Mexican wrestler, and we put a mask on him, and he becomes like a superhero. He becomes just like a Superman or a Batman, but he doesn't have any special powers. You know, bad guys can beat him up, he can get hurt. So I sat down, wrote this movie, and then I said, I started casting it. Like, you know, just local people. I already had a few people in mind. And I went to a Lucha Libre show, and I saw these luchadores, and I went backstage, and I said, introduce myself. Hey, guys, I'm Alfonso. I have this idea, this movie idea. You know, I need three bad guys. The problem is, but asking these guys to be bad guys, in the ring, there's rudos, which are the bad guys, and then there's technicals. And these guys are technicals. These guys are good guys. But I asked them to play bad guys in my movie. But they went ahead and did it. And then I casted for Alambrista. I found this guy. And I wasn't 100% happy with them. You know, like, it just didn't fit right. But I was like, I couldn't find anybody else. And I just wanted to start shooting.
What were you looking for in someone to play Alambrista?
I couldn't even tell you what I was looking for. I just knew it wasn't... It wasn't matching up. It just didn't fit. But, you know, you would think living in Tucson and out from the border, there would be a lot of Mexican actors, and I couldn't find anybody. And then I got a phone call, and it was Fausto. And he didn't know me, I didn't know him, and I already casted, but he's like, hey, I heard you're looking for people for your movie. And I was like, well, I already casted everybody, but I'll meet you. You know, we can find a place for you. So then we went to lunch. I met him at, what's the restaurant?
El Molinito.
Yeah, so he was already there. And he was sitting in a booth. And I walked in, and I've never seen him before. But the second I walked into the restaurant, I saw him, like, that's the guy right there. Like, I knew right then and there, like, that's the dude that's going to play Alambrista. That's, even though Alambrista wears a mask, he looks like him. Does that make sense? Like, you're going to be able to see his features coming through the mask. I promise you, I thought that the second I saw it. So, and then I sat down, we talked, and I knew in my head, like, this is the dude. But I can't tell him that he got the part, because even though I've never seen him act, I just knew, like, this is the guy. But I couldn't tell him right then and there, because I had to talk to the other guy and tell him, hey, look, I think I'm going to go in this other direction.
Oh, man, it's like a breakup.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't do it over text, did you?
No, back then there was no text. That's a long ago, there was no text back then. That's crazy.
Then you were nice to him. That's good.
Yeah,
the text breakup isn't great.
No. Usually I get dumped. It was a little different this time. So I talked to the guy and I said, look, man, I'm going to go in another direction. And he was cool with it. You know, I don't think he... Honestly, if I would have stuck with that guy, I don't think this movie would have gotten done. Because...
Was his heart not in it or something? Or is it just...
It don't know. It just, maybe I don't think he felt it. Like, it was just something that he wasn't really, you know, I'll do it, you know? And you can't have that, especially the game we're playing, you know? It's like on the weekends, you know, you go and shoot. You know, I took him away from his family and his kids, you know, every other weekend, it seemed like. And then he would come home all beat up and tired and dehydrated because we couldn't afford water.
You can get free water at places, you know that, right?
Now I do. But back then...
So, you're saying back then, how long has this been going on? What's the life of this?
I started with this movie in 2003. We finished it two years later. And so it aired in 2005, October 5th, 2005.
The first movie?
The first movie.
Oh, okay. Wow, man, that's a long time.
Yeah.
I was still in high school 10 years ago.
No, yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I can't believe it's been
not to put years. An age to you guys, but I was in high school 10 years ago.
Yeah, because I was 23 years old, and I was thinking, You know Robert Rodriguez?
Yeah.
Okay. He wrote a book when he was like 26, but he was 23 years old when he started El Mariachi. And I was thinking, oh, I'm on track. Like, he started when he was 23. I'm 23. You know. But obviously, our careers have gone. You know, he's huge, and I'm just a couple steps above where I was.
Your story could still play out, man.
No, yeah, there's still
you hear plenty of people who like they're 50 and like, oh, then they made it big.
Right, right. Those overnight success when they're 50, like, yeah, but they have 20 years behind me. So you know, I'm not, you know, I don't mean to make it sound like I'm a failure. I'm far from that. It's just that, you know, that guy's in the stratosphere and we're still climbing.
Is Alambrista your main thing, or do you have other projects you work on?
Right now, it's pretty much my main thing. You know, I work 50-hour weeks, and in the spare time, I work on my movie. And that's why it takes so long. Especially the first movie. Like, you know, I was learning. You know, I had maybe 4 years of camera experience, editing experience, and so I was learning, and I can't watch the movie. I cringe. Like, there's scenes where like, what was I
thinking? I know that feeling, man. With this, I can't, like, oh, I had to listen to myself. Yeah,
yeah. It's hard.
Do you watch? You go back and watch them?
Every time the kids want to pop it up, and you know they have a friend over, and they're like, "Dad, can we watch the movie?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I'll sit there for a little while, and I'm the same way, you know. Because I see a lot of things I could have done different. And I'm like, oh my god, why didn't I do that different? You know, so I hate watching it, but I love watching it for the reason that as an actor, I grew a lot from that. That was actually my first role in a movie. Back then, going back to his story, I was already in college. I was doing, you know, I was at Pima and I was doing some acting there with theater. And then I was taking some private classes from a guy that came down from L.A., Gio Saspienza. He was my acting coach at that time. And I had gone to California to go visit family that weekend. And he calls me up and goes, hey, man, I just heard they need a Mexican with long hair to act in this movie. And at that time, I had long hair. And I said, all right, give me the number. I'll give him a call. And I never done an audition. I never gone nowhere because for 3 years I was just preparing myself, and I said I'm not gonna do anything until I'm comfortable doing it. So when he calls me, I get the number and I call him, and you know, he says, can we meet tomorrow? And I'm in California, and I threw a wild lie and I said, oh, I'm in California shooting a commercial. But I'll be back on Monday.
Oh, this guy's working a commercial. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. I wanted that extra.
Yes. Plus, he showed up with an 8x10, you know? I was like, oh, this guy's good.
A headshot. Bro.
Portfolio. Here you go. Yeah.
So, Julie goes, okay, yeah, let's meet Monday or whatever day it was. And we showed up, and then from there, you know, he told the rest of the story.
Rest is history. Oh, man. And so, you went to Pima for acting, you said?
Yes, I went to Pima, and then I was doing some local as well, you know, like theater stuff, like sort of independent kind of thing. And then after that, that's when I started auditioning. I did his movie. After that, we started doing other stuff. Then I hooked up with the film director at U of A, Vicky Westover, and she started using me for students' projects that were in the film industry. So I started doing a lot of student films.
Nice.
For the U of A, commercial radio spots, and I've been at it for 12 years, going on 13.
Does Tucson keep you pretty busy?
You know what? It's funny. There's like waves. There's times where I got 2-3 projects a year, and sometimes they overlap each other. And then there's times where there's, you know, I could go like 6 months with anything. But yeah, I mean, I always love to keep going with my craft, and I do, you know, we have a mutual friend who does has a YouTube channel, and he does kind of like short skits. So I'm always doing those with them, and those are always fun.
Yeah, YouTube is the way to go nowadays with a lot of stuff.
With a lot of stuff, yeah. So I mean, I done from regular, like no budget, like zero budget, no water on set, up to Hollywood caliber movie sets where they have everything for you, trailer, food, a
chair with your name on it,
everything. Yeah. So it's. I got to film festivals with some of the movies that I got into film festivals, and those are always great, you know, rubbing elbows with big times out there, and those are a lot of fun, by the way. And so I kind of, there's a big gap between Hollywood movies and low budget movies, and I've been up and down through all those, and it's great. I wouldn't say I prefer one than the other, just going out there.
Wow. It's so, because I feel like Tucson's tried a lot in its history to be more welcoming to crews who want to make movies, or studios that want to make movies here in Tucson. And I think that's part of why we have old Tucson studios here at all. How since you guys have a perspective on it, how do you feel like Tucson's lately has been about being able to convince and, you know, and kind of entice studios to come and shoot stuff here? How welcoming are we to that?
Well, I think Tucson's pretty welcoming. The problem is it's not Tucson's fault. I think it's up in Phoenix. There's no incentives for these companies to come in here and work. You know, like Breaking Bad, I heard, wanted to shoot here in Tucson, but instead they got incentives to go shoot in New Mexico.
Oh, you mean like the Breaking Bad could have been in Tucson instead of Albuquerque? Right. Oh my God, what were they thinking?
You know, but we've lost a lot of movies.
It's our government, man.
Yeah, it's there's no
surprise.
No, I mean, no incentives. There's no, they don't get, like in New Mexico. I don't know how incentives work for the most part. But my understanding is, like, if you spend $1 million in, like, in New Mexico filming a movie, the government gives you back 30%, so that's $300,000 in your pocket that then you can reinvest back into your project, you know. But do those incentives work for guys like us where we're so low budget, where we're making, you know, movies at like $30,000 budgets? You know, no, because there's no incentives for us. Now, if they say to me, hey, you make a movie, and when it's all done, and you show us all your receipts and everything, and it's legit, and you spend $30,000, and we're going to give you back 30%. That's a lot of money for, especially guys like us, you know, that are, you know, we're making it on the weekends, we're taking days off from work or whatever.
Yeah, but you sound like that all comes out in the end when I figure you could use that money more up front.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll take it either way. Because the thing is, once the movie's done, you know, realistically, you know, we're broke. And then that money coming back, let's say that 30%, now we can start paying off the movie, some of it, or use that money to promote the movie, you know, you know, Facebook advertisements or film festival entry fees.
Or like the cons where I met you, right. All that.
Because everybody always tells you, you know, oh, enter in this festival. I'm like, yeah, I get that. You just told me 10 festivals at $100 a pop. That's $1,000.
10 festivals, 100 pop. Yeah, jeez.
You know what I mean? It's not cheap. It's not. This is not a poor man's hobby, you know. You know, it'll make you poor. It'll make you broke.
Really, and if you don't get accepted, you don't get money back.
Right.
Yeah. Also, the entry, those $100 fees are just for, like, see if I can go in. Not just,
right.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I have a stack of rejection notices like that. You know,
you just plaster them on the wall and go, these are the places that kept me down, but,
you know. But this thing is, like, this business is, you're going to get rejected more than you're going to get yeses, you know. So you better get used to being rejected. You know, I'm used to it. All the girls dump me, so I have a lot of training in that, so I'm okay. It's hard. It's really, really hard, you know. If anybody ever wants to do this, you know, go for it. Do it. Yeah, you know, it's worth it. But
So I mean, so it is hard in well, the laws kind of make less incentives for movies to be made here. Is there anything that we can take advantage of though?
Yeah, you know, okay, it's like this. So it kind of benefits us small guys that there is not incentives, and that I mean, people might guys like me, like they're director types, you know, they're shoot. They're, for actors, it's bad. All right, let's say we did have an incentive program, and all these big studios are coming into town, and they're going to these locations, and let's say there's this bar, and I want to film there, but this other film crew already filmed there. They walk in the door and say, hey, we want to shoot in your bar, we're going to pay you $10,000, and you know, you're going to get this and this and that, right? Mm-hmm. I walk into the bar a week later, once they're done wrapping up, say, I want to film in your bar. I'm like, well, last guy just paid me 10 grand.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, I don't have that kind of money. That's my whole budget. You know, I was like, well, then you can't film here.
You know, they get a taste of right. a big studios coming in to right. do something, and
you got to pay to play now, you know? Oh. And but now it's not like that. I walk in somewhere and say, hey, I'm going to make a movie. I'm making this movie. What is it about? It's about this and this and that. Oh, great. Come on in. Here, by the way, here's some free beer for your cast. You see what I'm saying? We don't take advantage of it, you know, but it's easier for us small guys to be able to, you know, get locations. Like, I have a friend that went to shop on the Santa Monica Pier in Los Angeles. The permit was $200 just to show up. And then he was shooting, and some guy came up and says, hey, is that building in your shot? And he's like, yeah, it's gonna be $500. And he's like, well, what do you mean? It's like, I have my permit. He goes, no, if you want my building in your movie, it's gonna be $500.
Oh.
So you gotta turn the camera. So yeah. You gotta pay the guy. You know, so stuff like that. You know, so it benefits small guys like me that are, you know, producer types. But if big movies are coming in, it benefits him because it's he's an actor. He can get a part, a speaking role. You know, like in one day he can make $1,000. You know, if they like him, they say, hey, come back. We'll have three more days of lines for you. He just made $3,000 or $4,000in less than a week.
Wow. So. But it doesn't happen too often because when big productions do come into town, they're already cast. And all they want is extras. You know, they'll give you like $70 to be there all day. And you're just a background.
But sometimes they need somebody just like, you know how it is. Sometimes. Hey, we need somebody just to say this one line. And they go find somebody. And then next thing you know, your pay just went up because you said that one line. Because it's a Hollywood movie. They got to shell it out. So... It happens, you know, like even like us, when we're shooting a movie, I'm like, oh man, I need a cashier, or I need this person to do this, or this, you know, whatever. Somebody just say this one line. If I was a Hollywood movie, I'd have to pay them a lot more instead of what I'm paying them. Nothing, right?
So, goodwill.
Here's some water.
Here's a lunch.
I got lunch.
I got one this time. Lunch.
But by the way, thank you for the water.
Yeah, no worries.
See, you're big time now.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah, by the time anything comes to Tucson or the Southwest, they've already got their LA people with them. And really, I guess comparatively speaking, we're not that far from, you know, 6-hour drive gets us to LA, but it's still a whole different world. If you're not there, you're not coming back out here to get these parts you're talking about.
And I hear you don't have a casting director or a agent per se that you could actually go to, and they could have those kind of hookups where if there's going to be a movie out here, you know, they go through them or whatnot. There's nothing here. There's one person, one legit person up in Phoenix, and a lot of local actors do go up there with her. But for the most part, you're pretty much on your own. And when I was in school, and after I was almost done doing the transition from going to school to actually doing my craft, that was my goal, was to either go to LA and try my luck, or go into Mexico and try my luck. Unfortunately, when you have kids and a divorce, you just can't get up and go anymore. You know, why? Because you just can't take your family anymore. So now you're sort of stuck here because of the family. And I mean, I think there's always a purpose for everything in life. So maybe that's a good thing. you know. Luckily, my resume has been growing, and I haven't been able to lose contact with my family, so that's pretty important to me.
But once that's kids, respectable, man.
Yeah, and once my kids all grown up, you know, and you could be a 70-year-old actor, and you could still find work in LA. So I'm not worried about, you know, oh, getting up there in age, or, you know. Plus, it gives me a chance to do other stuff, which is, you know, I'm writing my own scripts now and teaching a class at an academy. So,
oh, nice.
You know, it keeps me busy.
I mean, again, you get those experiences that kind of. I'm not an actor in any sense of the word, so if I'm saying something that sounds like total BS, let me know. But I can only imagine that having more experiences like that helps you out as an actor to feed that.
Exactly. Feed that inner, I don't know how would you call it, but there's...
Whatever that feel is that you take from.
There's something that you gotta scratch, you know, like when you got something in your back that's itching, and you need to scratch, and you're looking for ways to scratch that little part that you can't reach. It's kind of the same thing inside. When I go 2-3 months without doing anything, I'm like, I need to do something. I need to do something. I just cannot be. Go this long without anything. So, you know, I go on Craigslist, and, you know, some people post a lot of stuff on Craigslist saying, I'm shooting this, I'm doing that, there's no pay, or there's little pay, and, you know, I'm okay financially, you know, because of work, to do some of those things where there's no pay. Of course, we love getting paid. We do this for a living. I wish I could do this for a living where I would do nothing else but act. In Tucson, you can't really do that. But if I was like in LA, New York, Mexico City, maybe I could do that, but not in Tucson.
At least not yet. Not with the way things are as they stand. What I just thought of is because we talked about YouTube before. Have you done anything on the web yourself to try to put out your acting or your scripts or your art in some other fashion? Other than directly the movies, have you tried something online?
Well, I'm working. My next project I'm working on my own is I'm writing a mini telenovela, which is, you know, it's not a big novela. It's just I call it a mini telenovela because it's gonna be maybe 30 to 35 episodes.
Yeah, that's many. Yeah,
two to three minutes an episode, which I will put in a YouTube form. And my vision is to have the main characters cast here in Tucson because there's a lot of talent here in Tucson.
That's the thing. When we started out, it didn't seem like there was that many people that we can pick from. Now there's more people.
A lot more. So cast the main characters here and then do cameos and bring them from Mexico City, bring them from LA, you know, big names that will attract a lot of people with money to invest in this novella, because even at 2 to 3 minutes, you're probably spending about $1,000 for a good product, and that's what I want. I want to have a good product out there. I don't want a cheapy handheld camera, you know, and
shaky
cheesy,
cam.
Yeah, a cheesy product. I want a legit looking novella with legit actors in it as well.
Oh wow. And is this something you'd be directing other besides writing, or you think you'll be in it as well?
Of course I'm gonna be in it. That's the beauty of writing your stuff, that you get to you get to choose whatever role you want to be in it. And
I directed this, I wrote it, and I acted in it.
Exactly. And I haven't had a chance to be the bad guy in a lot of movies. I'm usually the immigrant, the cholo. You know,
I was going to ask you, like, how diverse are your roles? Because I can imagine that there's still some of that, you know, profiling that happens as far as like getting parts.
Of course, and you can't take it personally because, again, this is a craft that we do, and if you're able to portray somebody, you know, it would be great to portray a doctor, but I don't know how fun that would be, as opposed to portraying somebody. Wrecking hell, you know. So,
Luchador does sound a lot more fun to, as an acting thing, yeah.
A bad guy is always more fun than a good guy. And so, in this novella, there's this bad guy. And this bad guy is going to be like the really bad guy. Like scum of the earth kind of bad guy. So, I'm going to be that bad guy.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought about that, man. Like, always cast, you know, you always get casted, you know, migrant or... Yeah. Cholo, you know what I mean? And I've heard other interviews with the like old the other actors in Hollywood, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm typecasted. I'm working, you know, but I'm typecasted." But it's like how do you break out of that?
I don't think you can really.
You know,
I mean, look at Danny Trejo. Mm-hmm. I mean, Danny Trejo's being a bad guy in every movie.
Well, or just a badass, really. I mean, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
It isn't like he's doing like a romantic comedy anywhere.
Exactly. You know, he's not the main, you know, the main guy who's gonna be sweeping women off their feet, but he's always in movies, you know, and
a lot of them, man. And a lot of work.
And I don't see any problem with that. There's a lot of people that do take it to heart and say, you know, I'm not gonna do this, but that just makes you an asshole. Oh, I don't know if I can cut that.
You can say whatever. Yeah. There's no censorship here. You're good.
You know, why would you want to be that way? You know. Another thing that I see is like when actors are out and about and a paparazzi comes up to them, you know, they get into a big fight or an argument or they walk away. It's like when you're starting, you just can't wait till that happened to you. You know, like I remember the first time I got recognized, you know, out in the street by a total stranger and they come up to you and say, "Hey, I saw you, you know, in the movie." And that's like, wow, you know, you get on the phone, you call your buddy, dude, I just got recognized, you know? So I'm like, how do you go from that to being a total dick to people, you know? Somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, can I take a picture of you?" You just blow them off. Come on, these people make you, you know? They're going to the movies to see your product, your name out there. So I think you owe that much respect, every single person out there. And if you don't like that, Why are you still there?
You know, I think it was just interesting. I was listening to another podcast where these guys were interviewing Paul McCartney.
Yes,
and they asked him about that, and his response was that if you come up and say you want to talk, we can talk. I love that. I love that you come up to me and we can talk and we can engage that way. But he says he gets really nervous and uncomfortable when someone just wants a picture because he feels like that's very shallow. So he's like, well, it's like I want to be more than a picture. So for him, he loves to talk to someone, but if it's just a picture, he feels a little used by the experience.
And I can see that happening because there is a lot of people that will take a picture of you and then try to sell it, you know. And I mean, I could see his point. At the same time, you know, you could turn that into a conversation. I mean, when that person came up to me and said, "Were you in this movie?" And I said, "Yeah." And we talked, and I introduced myself, and we were talking there for a good 2-3 minutes.
I think the way he said it is that he felt like when it's just a picture, like when someone says, "Can I just take your picture?" If it commoditizes, that's the word I want to use. It makes him act like to be like just a commodity rather than a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he doesn't like how dehumanizing that experience is a lot of the ways. Actually, I'll probably also think a lot of that has to do with just someone's personality.
Exactly.
Like, they're very introverted. They probably can't handle people as it is anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing, some of these people, like, if they're jerks, they were going to be a jerk probably with whatever path they chose other than acting. Like, if they were a school teacher or
the doctor.
You know, like, he's going to be a jerk regardless. It's personality driven.
Why isn't that doctor so nice? Well, because he just isn't good with people. He's good at fixing people, but...
it's a personality thing. It's either you're going to be nice or you're going to be nice. I assume most people don't change. Like, I like to talk to random strangers because you never know what they're going to tell you, what you're going to hear. I enjoy talking to random strangers. I seriously doubt that that will ever change, no matter how big or how successful.
We have recorded now that you said that.
No, yeah, I'll be true to that. You know, I don't think people just change. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You know, maybe when you get followed around all day long, you can't do anything. You know?
If it happens to anyone in this room, we'll have to come back and talk about it again.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, certainly it's not happening for me with this yet, that's for sure. So,
well, it's not happening for me. Well, like, I'll go, the second, the first and second movie, have a gentleman in the movie. His name, he used to be my neighbor, but he's a gentleman in a wheelchair. And he's recognizable. Like, you know, you see him once on a screen, you'll be able to find him in public, and he gets recognized all the time. So we'll be at lunch, and I can tell when people recognize him because people are like,
"He's the guy."
And then they'll walk by like, "You're in that movie," you know. and some of these people, I have no clue who they are. Like, I don't know if they maybe need their connection with him, or you know what I mean. I don't know how they know of him, but it's always, I find it fascinating that something that, like, not that I created him, but I thought of the character and said, we're going to throw you in there and be this character. It's kind of neat that, like, something that...
You had a hand in it at some level.
Yeah, I had a hand in it that people are going to recognize, you know?
Oh, that's cool. So,
especially when we go, like, to Mexico, you know? I remember going to Lucha Libre show in Nogales, and we're walking in, he's in front of me, and I start noticing all these kids, like, form around him. He stops, turns around, he gets surrounded by all these kids, and all shakes his hand, he's signing autographs, and then he wasn't down there that day, but all the kids were like, where's Alambrista? Oh, he's in Hollywood right now, you know? He's in Los Angeles.
Oh, nice.
Alambrista, you know? And they're like, they love the movie, you know? That's, to me, that's like, wow, look at, like, something that I created, all these kids enjoy it. That's awesome.
Actually, that brings up a good question. Is there a difference in popularity for your movie out here in Tucson, outside of Tucson, and Mexico?
Yeah, huge. Huge difference.
Huge difference? How so?
How can I put this?
Lucha Libre movies are probably easier to sell and market in Mexico because that's part of their culture. Just like, you know, Japanese stuff works better in Japan than it does here sometimes. But
that's exactly it, you know? And I think I need to learn how to phrase this properly because I don't want to offend anybody, but I think that, like, the American audience are not spoiled, but, like, you know, I can't compare my second movie, even though I did a better job, I can't compare that to, like, an action movie like Spider-Man. You just can't. Or Batman or Superman, because that's, you know, the effects, the budget, you know, whatever. So, in Mexico...
$100 million movie.
Right. Here in $100 States, movie. Like, kids are like, what it, you know, they don't get it. Like, you know, where are all the special effects? In Mexico, it's a little different. Yeah, they see Batman and Superman all on there. But the thing is, when they watch El Alambrista, they can relate because they see people on the screen that look like them. You know, you watch, you know, if you're a kid from Mexico and you watch Batman, you don't see, yeah, you enjoy it and you think it's awesome. But you're not going to be able to relate to anybody in the movie because there's nobody that looks like you.
At least not as much as compared to these other movies like the one you're talking about. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Well, the reason I always wanted to make movies, because when I was about 8 or 9 years old, my parents went to the theater. And in my hometown, there was only one theater and had two cinemas. Okay? And it was my parents and their friends and their kids. And they threw all the kids in a Disney movie and then they went to go watch a rated R action movie in the next one. And... when the cartoon that we watched ended 30 minutes earlier than the movie, so I snuck into the back of the room and I caught the last 30 minutes of the movie that they were watching, and it was a movie called Extreme Prejudice with Powers Booth and Nick Nolte.
I haven't seen it, but I think what you're talking about.
And the last 30 minutes is this huge action sequence in Mexico. Like, it is awesome. And I was glued, man. And that's the first time I ever seen, other than movies that I watched on TV when I was a kid, that I saw Mexicans on the screen, and I was like, those people look like people I know, you know, those people look like, you know, like, those guys are in Alvareta just across the border, you know. I grew up in Douglas and Alvareta, right on the border.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, those guys look like me, or I know people look just like them. And I was glued, and I was just in love with the imagery, and that was after that movie that I was like, that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know at the time when I was 8 or 9 that there was a director and I'm a cinematographer. I just thought, like, I want to be in the movies.
Movies.
Like, I remember just wanting to make movies.
I'm doing hand motions on an audio podcast. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's really cool. Yeah, that makes all the world sense to me, to being able to, like, connect with what you're seeing on the screen.
Right. So, and, like, my El Alambrista will connect here. It will connect here with people who think it's cool. Like, Lucha Libre is cool, you know, like, hipster types, you know. And
anyone who's seen Nacho Libre or Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. People in the wrestling world will love it because they're into that genre. It's a niche genre. It's a big genre, but it's a niche genre. But in Mexico, it'll be accepted more as a whole. Like, you know, everyday people will like it. Everyday people will watch it.
Like, part of life.
Right.
It's not something that's like completely weird or
no.
something far out. It's
no.
It's natural. It's a movie.
Right.
It might even be a normal movie for depending on your audience.
It's Lucha Libre, zombie with border issues. You know? So
wait, zombie?
Yeah.
I only seen bits of the movie. There's a zombie in your movie? Mm-hmm. I missed that.
What the deal is, well, the thing from the first movie to this movie, we've grown a lot. That's what it's about. We're growing. We're getting better. You know, he's gotten way better in his acting. I've gotten better in my directing, hopefully. My shooting has gotten better. My editing.
We got water on set.
We got water on set. And food. I treated you guys so well.
Next time might be soda.
We're getting up to the Kool-Aid level.
So, but this time we needed, how can I put this? We needed, like, a big name in the movie, you know, because we're still growing, you know, we're not at that level yet where they, you know, where we could say, you know, this is the big name. We went out and grabbed a big name.
You had your first movie, now you're looking to make a step or two up from there on your next movie. Show growth.
Yeah, well, the second one that just came out, that movie, we went ahead and got Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, the Hall of Fame wrestler. So when we found him, when I, what happened is I saw that he was doing a thing called God, I forgot what it's called, Jim Rose Circus. It was like a freak show, you know. And I was thinking, wow, this guy went from, you know, top of the world. You know, this guy was making $3 million a year in wrestling, and now he's doing this. And I'm thinking, and I looked him up, and I saw that he was wrestling in a high school gym. You know, he was doing it for charity, but he was still wrestling in the high school gym. You know, he went from the
oh, that's cool
from the tops of wrestling to wrestling in the high school gym. So I was thinking, you know, I'm a huge fan of his. I grew up watching him. You know, I thought he was so cool, and I wrote a character. When I wrote the character, I was thinking in my head, this would be perfect for Jake the Snake Roberts. You know, because he's a big character in the movie, but he's only sprinkled in the movie. You know, and I can pull it off. I know I can, if I could bring him out here, I know I can shoot all his scenes in a week. And I told a friend of mine at work, I'm like, I'd be awesome if I could get Jake the Snake Roberts for this part. And he told me, you're crazy, you're not going to get him. He's not going to do your movie, you're full of shit, you know. And that pissed me off. So I went online, I looked him up, and I found an email for him, and I started talking to his girlfriend / promoter or booking person, and we started going back and forth. And I said, look, I got this movie idea. She's like, send me the script. And then she's like, how much you know, depending on how much you offer Jake, he'll consider. So I told him a figure that I could afford, or that I can somehow figure out how to get the money. And I made an offer. And I remember sitting there at the computer, and all I had to do was hit enter. And I was just like, go for it. Screw it. You know?
Send the offer?
Yeah. I sent the offer, and they said, yeah, we'll do it. And I was like, oh, crap. Now I'm scared, because I got to come up with the money. I didn't have the money. And it was quite a bit for me, you know.
Just in the only way I know how to relate to what you're saying, because I mean, this sounds like a way level on anything I have. Anytime I ask people to come on the podcast with me, and they say yes, I get excited. Anyone who's willing to talk to me on the podcast at this point, yeah. I get excited for. So I don't know. I don't know if I can. You're you get to be a different level.
It was nerve wracking because this guy is, you know. There was a lot of history with him in terms of, like, you kind of know what he's done, you know, because it's all been documented, like, not showing up for shows and stuff like that. You know, he has his past, but I think he recognized, like, you know, he knew that I was a no-budget filmmaker, but he knew that this was something, like, you know, it could be a step in the right direction for him. And once he said yeah, I was like, holy smokes. This is really going to happen. And I started working as much overtime as I could at work and saving my pennies and came up with the money. And the rest is history. We had him on the set. He was great. Worked with him for 5 days. We hung out with them, you know, after the shoot, you know, and just hang out in the hotel room and talked. And, you know, it was awesome because we had... You know, I had tons of questions for him. Everybody did. Everybody who grew up watching him. Hey, what about this? What about that? And he loved talking about it. You know, because it took him back to a time and place where, you know, he really loved. So, yeah, he was awesome to us. Like, he was really, really nice. I just can't believe that. Like, you know, I could call him right now. You know, a childhood hero, I can just call him and say, hey, what's up, dude?
Dude. I'm getting chills for you, man.
Yeah, it's,
it's awesome. That is cool.
It was a lot. I still can't believe it.
What do you think of the final product?
He loved it. And he really did. And the gauge that I have on that is that before the screening, a couple days before the screening, we're going around doing press, you know, interviews or whatever. And I was talking to him about other movies that he's done since my movie. And he made one that, looks like a pretty legit movie. Like, it looks really good. I think it's called Dark Water. And these guys,
sounds cool.
These guys have it together, man. These guys have, like, you know, full crew, and the movie looks good. The movie looks real good. But he's done some other stuff, and he gave props to that movie. But he's done other movies, and I asked him, so are you promoting those movies? He goes, oh, hell no. Those movies are awful. They're embarrassing. I can't believe I did them, you know. But when you go in as an actor, you kind of don't know what you're really getting into, I assume, you know.
I assume you try to do your own best, but the final product is going to be up to more people than you.
Yeah, because you don't know how it's being shot. You don't know how the final cut is. You're in either just one scene or a few scenes, and that's all you know about the movie. You don't get a full script unless you're a big character. So when you get a 3-4 pages and you do that scene, you can only say, okay, what's going on in this movie? So, yeah, you never know what the final product is until it's done. And sometimes you're surprised, and sometimes you're embarrassed. And everything in between.
Yeah.
So
also, I saw in that one thing as a commercial for. No.
That wasn't
no,
me.
No. No.
And it happens to everybody, man. You know? And I'll be honest with you, like when somebody wants to pop in my first movie, I'm like, no, don't do that. Wait till the second one comes out. It's better. But you know what? What's going to happen is after I make my third movie, I'm going to like tell everybody, no, don't pop the second one in. It's still, wait till the next one. But what was I saying? I forgot what I was saying.
I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No.
Heroes.
I drew a blank.
No, you said he was talking about other movies.
He was telling me, he's like, I'm not gonna, you know, promote these movies, you know, and so I knew that was his gauge. If he does not like it, he's not gonna promote. You know, he's not gonna even talk about it. So the movie screening happened, and I told him that night, like, what did you think? He's like, I loved it, man. He was like, zombie movies can come, you know, really serious or really cheesy. And he goes, my parts were awesome. Like, I loved it. I really loved it. There was no cheesy, you know, anything in the movie. The movie was solid. And then he could have just said that just to be nice, I guess, you know. But what proved it to me was that when he flew back to Atlanta, he was on Monday Night Raw that Monday. And his daughter was texting me, and she's like, my dad's talking to the WWE people, he's being interviewed, and he was talking about the movie.
Oh.
You know, he was talking about how he's a zombie, he does this and that, and then he was showing the trailer to all the wrestlers at WWE on his phone. Here, check out this trailer. Check out this movie I just did.
Oh, wow.
So he's promoting it.
So all these big name wrestlers are watching your movie trailer.
Right, and I'm in communication with him and his daughter, and they're like, you know, let's start promoting this, let's start doing this and this and that. And so we're going to do probably like we're trying to get into Phoenix Comic Con in May. So if that happens, then we'll be there with Jake, and then we'll have a screening in Phoenix. So he wants to be involved.
That's cool.
So that's
oh my God, that's cool. Yeah. Again, Charles O'Hara, you can talk to all the time, just said that, oh yeah, what you did was awesome.
Yeah. He approved it. And he approved of it and liked it. And wants to promote it, and it's, you know, and it's good for him, it's good for us, and you know, it's one handshake and the other, it's a two-way street, because you know, him promoting it, he gets it out to his fans, and then, you know, we go along for the ride too, you know, and it's very kind of him to help us out too.
I can only imagine that as much as you do things for the art of it and for the sake of making a movie. Appreciation like that kind of feels really good.
Oh, it does. Especially, you know, when I'm shooting these movies, I want to make the best movie I can. You know, I really do. But it's hard to gauge. Like, it's really, really hard to gauge because you're on the set and you're shooting certain things and it's working on the set, and then you go home and you watch the footage, and the footage is like, what was I thinking? This sucks. And then you edit it. Hey, that's not that bad. Or it was good. Or it was reversed on the sets. Like, it's not working. But then you can watch the footage. And like, yeah, it's pretty good. And then you edit it. And it's really good. So it just, it's hard. You know, it just comes with learning, man. We have a long ways to go.
So what's the future look like?
Future.
Obviously, you got the Phoenix Comic Con. You just said that.
Yeah.
So you're doing some stuff with the movie you have right now.
Yeah, the future is... send a movie to film festivals. See if we can get picked up any. We went for the big ones. You know, you kind of have to. You know, go for the big ones. If you get rejected, go to smaller ones. You know. And then we're going to do screenings in Mexico. We're going to do, like, all the border towns. Like, I opened it to Nogales, Tijuana, Mexicali. And then go to random little towns in Mexico and just show it. Kind of show it till the wheels fall off, man.
And do you, how far do you go? Because... I'm trying to see if I can tell any of my family in Mexico where to go. Because I have family in Puerto Peñasco and Caborca.
Oh, yeah. We'll be in Peñasco and
Caborca. Oh, okay. Let me know. That way I can tell them to go
watch
it.
We're trying to go... You know, it's... You know, we're so no budget that it's hard for me to get places, you know. Because, you know, I have to work. And then, you know, to pay for the fuel and the hotel, you know, that all adds up. And if we're doing that maybe twice a month, you know, that's a couple bucks, you know. And the reality is, in Mexico, is that the movie, we're pretty much going to give it away in Mexico. We're not going to be able to charge people to come see it. You know, my reasoning is that I'd rather just have people see it, enjoy it, and, you know, you build a fan base, and it makes it easier to make another movie.
That's really cool of you.
You know, and people think you're going to, you make a movie and make millions of dollars. It could happen, sure. It could really happen. But the reality is that, you know, just be happy you make your money back and maybe a couple bucks, you know.
Definitely not an overnight thing from the sounds of it.
No, for sure. That overnight success crap that's garbage, you know. Because, a Hollywood guy might call me and say, hey, we saw your last two movies and, you know, here's $1 million budget and, you know, but it's like, and now I'm... overnight success? No. I have, you know, 16 years in television behind me. I have two movies. I have a couple documentaries that I've helped shoot. So there's a lot of work and, you know, a lot of hours sitting behind a computer editing and trying out things and a lot of years of getting rejected and telling everybody telling you no and you can't do this, you can't do that. And, you know, there's a lot of years of sacrifice. You know, some of the stories that we could tell you know, it's ridiculous on how difficult it is to make these movies.
How do you see Tucson in the Southwest as an environment for future movies? You think I know we talked a lot about the restrictions and maybe some disadvantages and advantages that happen here, but do you see? I mean, since you're part of that community, you know, do you think there are things on the rise in the recent, maybe kind of far off future?
Well, because technology is so much cheaper now, you know, you can... Some of these cameras are just incredible. You know, you can shoot a whole movie on a GoPro and it costs you $300, you know? $300 GoPro. And maybe like a $200 editing system, you know? It's amazing what you can do. So there's no excuses. Everybody can make something. But if the landscape works for you, great. You know, it's a perfect place. Everybody's friendly. Everybody's, you know, everybody's welcoming.
The community, there's community for it here.
Oh yeah,
and not only that, but I think now, like he was saying, back in 2003, there was hardly anybody, any actors, nobody doing anything. And I think once people see it can be done, then they start saying, "Well, if they did it, I could do it. Or they did that, I could do it better." And so it starts growing and snowballing from that. And I think. Now, I mean, there's a lot of people out here doing a lot of stuff, and not only low level, but also middle level or high level, and I think a lot of people are getting interested in that sort of craft in the acting, writing, you know. So, I think we definitely have a lot to do with opening the doors to independent filmmaking here in Tucson.
And as far as the kinds of projects that you all want to work on, because I mean, again, like you said, now that we're that more people are going to have access to making more stuff, which probably means we'll have more stuff to consume. You know, our society has a lot to consume thanks to YouTube and the Hulus and the Netflix, and then besides your regular TV and regular movies, do you see yourself branching out into different types of media? Or different genres more than what you've done up to this point? Is that something you actively look forward to, or do you think you're trying to capture something a little more specific for how you want to express yourselves?
No, I have a list of movies that I want to do, and all the movies are all different. There's a Western, there's a 1950s style movie, you know. So I want to go off and do all kinds of different stuff. I love Lucha Libre. I grew up watching those movies as a kid, and I just said, you know, I want to make one. You know, I think it'd be fun to make one. Made one, and then I watched it, and I was like, I could do better than that. So that's why I did part two. But I want to go off and do all kinds of stuff. I want to make all kinds of different movies, you know. Next year, which is, what, a couple weeks away? Or a week away?
Yeah, a week less.
I'm going to start producing a TV show that I want to do. I've been trying to do it for years.
Nice.
So I'm going to start doing that. And that's the project for 2015. While my downtime from that, I'm going to start writing the next movie. So I don't know if we're going to make a Lucha Libre movie, or I'm going to go off and do something totally different. I really don't know. I need to figure that out, because I have a year to figure it out. You know, I want to start shooting like March of 2016. And
I can't wait to talk to you about that too.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I just wish, you know, just like everybody else, you know, if we could just raise a decent amount of money, and we should be able to, you know, pump out a movie every year and a half instead of what took me 4 years. You know, this movie, we had some problems, you know, just, you know, not some problems you can't get mad at, and some, you know, just this is life, you know, just different things that happened to us, and some, you look back at them now, you laugh, and you're like, I can't believe we went through all that to make this movie. But like I said, I want to go off and make all kinds of different stuff, and it's kind of overwhelming, because I look at all the projects that I want to do. I'm like, how am I going to do all this? But I got to look at it one at a time, you know.
Ask Marvel Studios how they plan on putting out 20 movies in the next 20 years.
Yeah, they can do it. You know, those guys have more money than God, but they can definitely do it. But us, when we're struggling and we're just, you know, trying to raise a couple bucks, you know, to make a movie, you know, it's tough, and that's why it takes so long. So hopefully, now that we've done two movies and we've proven ourselves that, look, we did this movie with nothing, with practically nothing. Because majority of the money that I spent on these movies, you don't see it on the screen. You really don't. A majority of the money that was spent, it was spent on fuel, going to Nogales, lunch, equipment, Jake the Snake. What else did we spend money on?
Some wardrobe.
Some props. That's another thing. Is like some of the props were lent to me. You know, there's a haunted house, the slaughterhouse on I-10 and Grant. Those people, like, it was off season, so like, hey, I went up to them, hey, I'm making this horror movie. You guys have any stuff I can borrow? Yeah, go through there and take whatever you want.
Oh, that's really cool.
Just give me an inventory of what you took.
You know, I was gonna ask, like, how, because another part of the whole, like, how supportive is the community around here? Like, I was gonna ask you, like, how open are places like The Loft and apparently The Slaughterhouse even?
Oh.
They seem like they understand that this is a community effort to make this stuff happen.
Yeah, it is a community effort. Like, you know, The Loft was great to us. You know, and I get they have to charge us. You know, they're a business. I get that. You know, everybody has to make their money. I get that. But they don't gouge. They don't. That's the beauty of it, is that they charge X amount for the movie rental, for the theater rental. But since we're local, they give us like half off. I think it's half off. So that's awesome. That's a lot of money. You know, that they give us at a discount. So it's like things like that. When I'm saying people are welcoming. That's welcoming, because they could just say, no, we could sell this theater on that weekend for this amount of money, so that's what you have to pay. But no, you guys are from local, you guys are here, you're going to come back again and again and again, great, we're going to give it to you at this price.
So, and then going and shooting at Kontiki, going to go shoot at.
Oh, you shot at Kontiki?
Yeah. Shot at Kontiki.
I love that place.
Yeah. So I mean, going to all these places and like he says, you know, they open the doors for you, and at nothing, you know, they're happy. They're, oh yeah, yeah, shoot it here. You know, what do you need? Here's, you know, whatever you guys need. That's really good to have, because if it wasn't for that, you know, they like he said, they wanted money, they could definitely ask for it. Well, yeah, you know, they shot another movie here and they pay me. So you guys need to pay me. They don't do that, you know, and that's one of the advantages, is that we could go and someone knock the door and say, hey, you think we could shot a scene here? And they were like, yeah.
The first movie, I found this little boxing gym. It was awesome. Like, the boxing gym was cool as hell. Doesn't exist anymore. But I went in there and I spoke to the owner, and I told him I'm making this movie, and he's like, great, great. Like, when can I shoot here? And he grabbed his key and goes, here's the key. Come and go as you please. Anything gets stolen, I'll shut you down. That was it. He's like, just be careful.
Short, simple, sweet.
Like, don't use a lot of electricity. You know what I mean? Like, when you leave, turn off the lights, you know? And that was it. I was like, holy smokes. So I can come in his gym whenever I, you know, when he doesn't have to be there. I just come in and shoot, and lock up, you know? And I don't know how long I held the key on for, like, a year.
Yeah.
Something like that. I had his key to his business for a year.
We're always in there.
We're always in there, just going in there and getting this shot, you know? It was awesome.
Turning a boxing gym into a lucha libre gym.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool. Yeah.
So, it's stuff like that.
You know? So Tucson's aren't assholes. That's a good lesson. That's a good lesson. Because some people who don't get that. That's good to know from that kind of experience. Because, like you said, they probably... I mean, if they weren't so nice and welcoming... They have it in their ability to gouge you for something,
right?
And they obviously didn't.
Well, you hear like I said, we've heard these stories like in L.A. You know, like my friend, what happened to my friend? I heard this other one where they're shooting on this street in Los Angeles, and they're about to start shooting. People come out with their what are they called? Leaf blowers, start blowing. Like, we're about to shoot something. Well, it's gonna be fine. A box for me to turn this off.
Yeah. Oh wow.
That's the way it goes. You know, it's shit like that. That I don't think that would happen here. Unless Tucson became like so big in the movie world that everybody knew that it can scam the movie companies in a certain way. Like pulling crap like that. You know?
Man, that's a hard balance. I don't even know how you would enforce something like that. Like, mm-hmm. Keeping it small enough that you can do things like this and it can be welcoming, but still wanting it to grow without having the negative consequences of it.
That's... Well, when we show up to shoot somewhere, especially in Nogales, when we show up, people like surround us. Like, if you watch my next movie, there's scenes where you can hear people like cheering or laughing or clapping in the background, and there's nothing I can do about it, but that's okay. It's just the way it is. But it's because when we show up and start filming, everybody's like so in ooh and awe about it, you know? And if you do that in Los Angeles, people are like, eh.
Well, I'm assuming that maybe the idea in L.A. that the magic is gone when it comes to that. But,
right, they're sick.
But in Nogales, I have to imagine that, oh, they're making right. A movie? There's still magic in that.
Exactly, and there's still magic in it. And I hope that never goes away. You know, I really hope it doesn't. Because when I go down there and shoot, and you know, you get to meet all these people, and they're taking pictures with the wrestlers, and you know, all the kids, and I think it's fun. You know, I think it's a lot of fun. So I remember being down there covering, a story. Jennifer Lopez was down there and she was shooting a movie.
I remember hearing about that.
You know, and something that I saw, I was like, I it didn't sit well with me. She walked out of a building and got into an SUV and then like drove like 100 yards and they made like a fake garage for her and her trailer so the car can go in there. So like, you can't see her. She rolled the window down this much and waved at the people, and that was it. And the people were far away. And it's like, I get it. They're working. They got to shut down the streets, and they're working. I get that. But, you know, it just didn't sit well with me because if that was us, when we have downtime, I would encourage them to, you know, like, hey, go talk to those kids and take pictures and have fun.
Don't put up that wall.
Right. Because we're having fun, you know. I get it. You know, they're working. We're working, too.
And security stuff.
And I get it. Yeah, she worried about security and stuff like that. So
Did she have her kids at that time?
Like, I don't think so. I don't think so. So it was just something I saw. Like, it just didn't sit. Like, I said, I would not do that. But that's just me. You know?
Well, you can keep those values, man. I think that would be great. I think we all could be better if we can keep those kind of values. But we'll see what happens when we get there.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's a different world still.
Right. They experience something every day, and I don't know what they experience, so I'm not going to really, really judge them for it. But I saw it, and I was like, it didn't feel right for me.
Well, we're all past an hour, man. This has been great so far. So that's kind of a closing thought. I've been talking to you all about what your skill, your own skill set, but anything you as more of a consumer, more on the other side of it, experiencing your different projects, anything you guys are excited about for this coming year, anything that you look forward to as far as inspiration for yourself, or just something that you'd geek out over.
I'm excited about to see how big we can make this movie, like how big this theater run or cinema run we're gonna do in Mexico. I just want to see how big we can get. You know, that's just I don't know what it is. I just want to go out there and have fun and show the movie and talk to random people and meet a bunch of people and let see if they liked it, see if they didn't like it, and I just want to see how big we can go. You know, why not? We worked so hard making this movie. And now we just gotta go show everywhere and see
enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride, yeah. And then like I said, my TV show that I'm gonna start producing, and so it's gonna be a busy year.
2015, that's the year to grow, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, man. And you got anything in the pipeline yourself, Fausto?
There's a couple movies that are gonna get shot that I sort of got a piece of a scene in some of those, and also trying to see if I could get my novella up and running by August or September
episodes. When those come out, man, feel free. I'd love to talk to you about those too. And yeah, and anytime you guys want to talk about something or put out something, you're always welcome. I'd love to talk to you guys again. Cool. For your project.
Great.
Without a doubt, man.
Cool. Well, it was a pleasure talking to the both of you. Thank you for inviting me to your home and letting us. Thank you for the water.
Yeah.
And thanks for letting me hang out with you guys.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you, man.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Adios.
Adios.
This has been a presentation of Front Row Geeks. Adios.